Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome, everybody, to the Motorsport issue commentary. This is for the November 2017 issue. We've done a few of these preview or these commentaries so far, and the aim of the game is for you to hopefully, if you've got the magazine in front of you, is to listen as we talk you through the kind of the behind the scenes elements, what went into putting this issue together. And I'm joined today by Damon Cogman, who
Hello.
Is our editor, and Simon Arron, our features editor.
Afternoon.
Hello, Simon. Hello, Damon.
Hello.
This issue has Niki Lauda on the cover. And not only that, we've put together four collector's covers, and each one has a different portrait of Niki Lauda that reflects a different point in his career. So if I can remember rightly, we have, starting from the earliest point of his career, we have Niki Lauda the rookie, Niki Lauda the brave, which obviously reflects the mid-70s era, the fighter, likewise, and the thinker, so which was the McLaren era. And each portrait, Damon, if I come to you, we spent a lot of time, didn't we, finding these.
A cover's always a fun thing to do anyway, and when you have four of them to do, suddenly...
it all comes out now.
The fun multiplies by four. where you end up with is a big pile of images, metaphorical images, for potentially the cover for one image. So obviously if you're trying to find four of them, then it kind of multiplies up. So you do end up with a very lot of pictures to sort of push through, which is great. Obviously, it's great fun. Yeah. But yes, it does make it a little bit tricky. And obviously we came to the idea of the four ages quite late in the schedule for this one. We had brilliant plans about what we were going to do, and we even had the lunch with that.
The straight
portrait that we sort of went to. All the way to Austria, was it? It was Austria.
It was Austria, yeah.
Yeah, Vienna. Yeah. And took his photo in Austria. So it was, so we had many, many options. And obviously the obvious thing is to put Ferraris and McLarens. But then I think it was your fault. I think it was your idea.
It's my fault.
It was
definitely
your idea.
I think
we came up with four ages of Niki.
Well, it came mostly about because Simon had delivered such a comprehensive lunch with, and we had
breakfast with, strictly speaking.
Breakfast, lunch, yeah.
Although he'd eaten his breakfast before I got there.
And so therefore we had this broad, wide-reaching story, and then we started to compartmentalise it, didn't we? And thought, we've got everything from his early days with the sort of the arguments he had with his family all the way up to the present day, really. So it made sense, I think. But I must admit, I do apologise for saying, right, we're not doing that now, we're doing this.
And we're doing four of them. Yay!
But we'll come to you, Simon, because, tell us what happened, the behind the scenes of pulling together an interview with Niki Lauda, who's quite busy.
To be honest, it actually ended up being reasonably straightforward. I mean, I'm lucky that I've dealt with Niki a few times before, and we initially contacted Mercedes, his current employer, who said, yep, sounds like a great idea, put me in touch with his PA, and from there on it was, she said he wouldn't like to do lunch, he'd like to do breakfast, which is fine, so flew out on a Monday afternoon to meet him for a Tuesday morning breakfast, arrived half an hour early and discovered that Niki had already eaten his breakfast, so he didn't quite grasp the full concept of us having breakfast with him. But nonetheless, we sat and chatted while everyone else around us had breakfast. And
if I could interject, the breakfast bit is the best bit. The Niki Lauda.
Well,
breakfast.
Don't give it away too
I'm not
much.
Give it away, but the best bit of that is the
I mean, there is the reason the location in the hotel that we where we ate was chosen. Well, we did eventually eat was chosen was because Nicky's been having his breakfast there since about the 14th century. He can't remember when he started going there, but he's almost as much a part of the furniture as the furniture. And as we were sitting chatting, everybody just kind of acknowledged him. And I mean, you can't miss him with a bloke in a dark Viennese restaurant with a bright red hat on. But he was great company, very engaging, understood exactly what we needed, and just kind of switched on the dictaphone and said, "Right, your life." And a little bit of prompting from me along the way, but basically we just chatted for 90 minutes, and most of it was him just telling me about his life. And I first saw him race in 1972. I was an 11-year-old kid. He won a Formula 2 race at, surprisingly, Alton Park. And
sorry, where?
Alton Park.
So I've never
Where's that?
And
you never mentioned that.
I mean, he absolutely walked that race. It was the first time I'd heard of him. And from then on, I mean, throughout his time racing in Formula 1 with March, BRM and so on, I always kind of followed his progress, because that watching him win by 40-odd seconds in the teeming rain made such an impression on me. And, you know, incredible privilege to have had a chance to deal with him professionally in the motor racing paddocks of the world, and then to go and meet him for something like this was just fabulous. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed the whole thing. I mean, I hope that comes across in the piece. But, I mean, I certainly enjoyed it.
And because no stone is left unturned here at Motorsport, we have actually I would say there's a quarter of a page image there, Damon, of the menu.
What?
We have the menu there, and I won't go into it too much. But to the Wiener Melange, whatever, that's a sausage.
It's a coffee.
Oh,
are you sure?
What?
Yes, it's a coffee.
Wiener's a sausage, isn't it?
Wiener
means Viennese, from Vienna.
And a melange? Yeah.
It's a frothy coffee.
So what's a Wiener?
It's a schnitzel. A schnitzel from Vienna. Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Well, it's a German lesson and a Niki Lauda interview all in one go.
and I guess what I got from this, and I think it needs, I think it was an important story to tell as well, was just how flipping good he was. I mean, we talk about Niki the thinker. One of the cover, one of the four cover options was this thinker idea. But his actual pace, like you say, winning that race by 40 seconds, his speed in the mid-70s was really something else. And it seems like we remember him more for his bravery or for his, you know, his mental, you know, sort of skill, his intellect, you know. But his speed was...
I had a conversation, this was several features ago, and I did the Formula 2 50th anniversary piece, and I spoke to people who were involved at the time, and one of the team, well, he was a mechanic I think at the time, you know, when Niki Lauda arrived, they regarded him as a renter driver whose sponsorship was basically helping to pay the cost of running Ronnie Peterson. And he said it only took him a couple of practice sessions to realise that he's not just a renter driver, he's actually pretty good. And I think that
He raced so much as well, doesn't he? I know we kind of, again, we don't want to give too much away, but the amount of different cars and things he drives, things that you wouldn't expect him to recognise him for, but...
Yeah, you look at page 61, I think, you know, that the opener to this story shows a number of the cars that he raced and the variety there's something else. So, yeah, you take a look at page 60 and you'll see, but...
I mean, it's something I'd actually forgotten until I was chatting to him. But he was chatting about racing a Cologne Capri, and it was 74 when he was a works Ferrari driver. And I mean, I can't see Sebastian Vettel or Kimi Raikkonen jumping into a Ford Focus or a Fiesta in the current climate somehow.
Yeah. Although you probably see them both jumping into a Cologne Capri.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, maybe. Well, certainly Seb. Certainly Seb.
Certainly
yeah.
Certainly
yeah.
Right now, anyway.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, with these issue commentary podcasts, I've got a request. Would you mind, if you're listening to this and you're enjoying it, tell your friends about the issue commentary, because we're quite proud of them. This idea that you can buy the issue and then you can put your headphones on and listen along as you're reading and kind of get an idea for how we produce the content. So tell your friends about the Motorsport Magazine podcast, and of course tell them how much you enjoy it.
Yes, I think you can click likes and things as well on the interweb, can't you?
that's our social media expert, correspondent.
Yeah. I think you go to iTunes and definitely get it up the list as well.
Yeah.
And as it's an opportunity to tell readers a little bit about the way we produce the magazine, can I also just point out to the mate of mine I bumped into on the train this morning, who's a subscriber, and the first thing he said to me was, "Why have they taken your column out of the magazine?" And he had a copy with him, and I was able to sort of direct him to you know, 30 pages to the left.
He had one with him. What are you walking around with them now?
No, he was about to catch a flight, and it was going to be his reading material. It was this issue. He was going to read it on the plane. But he was a bit disappointed to see my column had been taken out of the last issue. I pointed out to him that actually it's just 30 pages, 40 pages to the left of where it was. The same applies to the readers who've written and complaining Doug Nye's not in there anymore. He is. He's just
there.
It's just it's a slight jigsaw puzzle, but it's all still there.
Yeah, I think this is the second issue of the refresh. We talked about it in last month's preview. And yes, we have rearranged some of the pacing and the format of the title, but Simon is very much there. Doug is very much there. And we've had a few letters saying I can't find them, and I think there's even a rumour going around that possibly someone has decided they wanted to re-flat plan it and cut pages out. Simon, tell this story?
do you want to know where I was when I heard this story? Can you guess?
Does it begin with O?
it does begin with O. I was at the Gold Cup weekend, I think it was, at Alton Park, and a long-standing reader came up to me and said that he liked some of the stuff we'd done, wasn't sure about other bits, and we had a chat about it.
Told him he was wrong, obviously.
Yes. And he was generally positive.
Good.
But he said that one of his friends still liked the content, but felt that we'd moved things into the wrong places, and apparently had gone through with a kitchen knife or a scalpel or something, and had been cutting pages out and putting them back in the order he wanted them. Although how he can do that and maintain the running flow of an eight-page feature, I'm not quite sure.
Advanced flat planning, that is.
Yeah, so whether he's had to sort of since reshuffle it.
I think he's just invented his own genre as well. I don't think you can actually even do that in the real world. So I think, if we can invent a technology where you can do that,
my recommendation would be to sort of ride with us for a couple of months. You will get used to the new running order.
Yeah, good. I mean, I'm glad that he didn't just throw
nice
it
that
in
he
a
cares.
Bit. You know, yeah, nice that he cared. He wanted to put it back into an order that he was familiar with. So, so the second issue of the refresh, we've made a few sort of tweaks here and there. We've listened to some of the feedback on some of the areas, and I think actually probably over the next couple of issues or so, we'll continue just to sort of tweak and improve, but. Hopefully you can see what we were trying to do: bigger, bolder pictures, more content, the new features at the back end, including Garagista, which follows a Jordan F1 car as it's being restored, a wonderful Alpha Sprint that's also being restored and will be raced soon, and then some lunatic who's attempting to race an MGB, which I won't talk about my victory in the...
All week in the office.
What was that, Damon?
Simon,
you want me to tell you the full...
No, love to hear more.
No, I won't.
It wasn't at Alton Park, not interested.
No, exactly.
And we won't talk about the being brought before the stewards inquiry either. But twice. We'll carry on.
I'm getting a bit of a reputation. I didn't know that
It's all or nothing.
Yes, I did overtake before the safety car line. I did, but it was 0.12 of a second, and then the other one, and then the one after that was Jack's
fault. Anyway.
Shall we move on?
Yes, shall we?
Okay, well, let's talk about somebody who is actually a very good racing driver and annoyingly a very good writer as well. Let's talk about Dickie Meaden's quite astonishing victory in the St Mary's Trophy at the Goodwood Revival.
Oh my God, what a race.
Wasn't it something else?
It was. I wasn't there this year, but I caught up with subsequently on one of the various miracle channels on the web, and hell of a race to watch. He and Mike Jordan, both properly competitive drivers. But the great thing about it for me was it wasn't just the fact it was so close, it's so clean.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the way the current BTCC is sometimes, and you've got 30 cars covered by 8/10 of a second or something, all driven by very competitive people. There will be contact, but occasionally. But some of it, I feel, is unnecessary. But something like that, I mean, that was every bit as close, probably closer than the current BTCC is, in cars that don't have as much grip, that aren't as easy to control, and yet, despite racing, half a cigarette paper apart for almost the entire distance, and both sideways over curbs, and but they never touched each other, never tried to touch each other, never looked like touching each other, and that was just it was brilliant.
It was mesmerising.
As it was, and there was also two A40s as well. There was Rob Huff and I forget who was in the other car now.
Yeah,
they were racing. They were
Jags. Well, the Jags were just behind. Just behind.
So never separated which were, by more than.
Because the A40 and the Alpha was occasionally slowing each other up because they were racing so closely, the two Jags behind kept getting into the mix, and then there was traffic. And no, I just thought it was a great spectacle,
it was
great credit to Dickie that having recovered from 104 mile an hour sideways moment through Ford water, although what he was doing getting sideways through Ford water, I don't know. He should be easy.
Get off the curb,
I think he saw a photographer.
Yeah, it wasn't me.
No, it was. I was there. He and I and a few other people had a few good beers the night before, as you do. It's an enjoyable evening, but then he sort of quite early. I thought he was like, "No, I'm going to have water now." And I was like, "Okay,
hang on a minute.
I'm going to carry on if you're not." But he still stayed out and had a good time. And then when I saw him the next day in the assembly area, he was looking. I mean, he always looks a little bit nervous before the race, and he would admit it himself. And the owner was there, who I met, who Jeff Gordon.
Not that one.
Not that one, yeah. The guy, he also owns the Alpha that we write about in Garage Easter, in the back of the magazine. And he was looking excited, and everyone was having a good laugh and a joke in the assembly area. And then off they went. And I honestly don't think I've seen a better race in any category for a long, long, long time.
Yeah,
I mean, as you say, the fact that it was the whole race and they were never more than, you know, a car length apart, and most of the time it was a cigarette paper apart.
And of course, we're a little bit biased, so we were cheering for Dickie, of course.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And this is the only place you'll read this story, and if you go onto the website, motorsportmagazine.com, you'll also see some onboard footage of the moment.
The moment,
the save of the season. That long moment when there's no more lock left, which is on page 83 in the magazine, but you can also see it on our YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. Or on motorsportmagazine.com. Mm. While I'm at the plugs, Barnes and Noble in the States, that's where it's a great place to get your copy of Motorsport. So please check it out. And they also use some of our videos on their Facebook channel as well. So take a look at that. So the next story, The Hunt for the Missing Pieces, page 86. Now, which missing pieces are these, Simon? What's the... What's missing there?
I think that's just a bit of graphic art, isn't it?
Grandma Damon then over it.
Possibly might be.
Yeah, the driver usually a plug and play component seems to have been jigsawed out of the of the graphic.
Not a phrase you hear that often, is it? Really jigsawed out.
I'm not even sure it's a verb, but it isn't.
I think we can now.
I'll read the stand first. Between separate phases of Renault ownership, the Enstone Formula One factory lost many key assets. The former champion knows it will take time to get back on terms with Mercedes and Ferrari, but it is prepared to be patient. The sense that I don't know about you, Simon, but I feel that Renault will be right up there within the next 18 months or so.
Yeah, if you look at in recent times, I mean, you know, Ferrari's been kind of omnipresent at the front, but Mercedes came in 2010. It took a regulation change, won races 2013, but it took a regulation change and a shift, and having been in the category for three or four seasons to become as effective as it has become. Red Bull came in 2005, was a race winner in 2009. That's 4 or 5 years seems to be generally for a new enterprise.
Yeah.
The kind of time it takes. But by and large, obviously Renault's not a new thing, but Enstone had been stripped of so many assets. I mean, you look at the people who've left there over time. Yeah. I mean, Bob Bell's back there now, but Pat Simmons and James Allison. And each time one of them went, it was like a Russian doll almost. Yes. There'd be another equally capable technical director, but waiting to step in there. But it had been, under the previous regime, it had been pared right back to the bare bones. And, you know, clearly, it's going to take time to get back to where it was in the mid-2000s as a back-to-back world champion.
But it was always a risk, wasn't there? Well, there was a risk for a while that Renault would almost disappear from real frontline motorsport completely. And that would have been very sad, because alongside Porsche, I don't think any other manufacturers is as committed to racing.
No.
If you go all the way down to Clio Cup, into the rally cars that they
If you
they
go back to the 1906 French Grand Prix.
That's a good point, yeah. But the fact that they compete in Formula E and Formula One, and actually a lot of manufacturers are doing an either or at the moment, I think it should be applauded that they are.
Well, and they've still got, the 2-litre Formula Renault is still...
Yep.
Generally across Europe it's the main kind of post national level single seater series that the guys go to when they want to start competing overseas.
Yep.
And as you say, they support club racing through the Clio Cup. They've introduced a new Clio Junior thing this year, which has been a slow starter, but it is gradually sort of building up steam.
Yep.
And they've been around, coincidence, but the first Grand Prix I physically attended was the 77 British Grand Prix, which was also Renault's first Grand Prix. So I've kind of got
you were there in 1906, when was it?
Something like that. 1977. If I can just make it was at Silverstone, not at the other place, been in with Oak.
Oh, you've been to two circuits.
Yes.
I was in 1906,
I think, it's nearer 102, actually. Right. But anyway, I've always felt a bit of a connection with Renault, because they've always done things as well. They were the pioneers with the turbo. They were the ones who made Honda came out with the V10 at the same time, but Renault were the ones who kind of really made that one work. And then when they came back in, they had the weird 111 degree V8. Didn't work, so they went and did some. But they've always been a company that have tried different things.
Yeah.
And I've always liked that.
And it filters down to the road cars, doesn't it? I mean, their sort of spirit and their essence kind of, it shows in all their kind of little...
Are you going to start talking about Avantimes and Velsatises?
No, not if you want me to, maybe not. No.
They were never sporting.
No, not so much, no.
But no, Renault Sport, for sure. Amazing. I mean, you can drive a Renault Sport car, it's going to sound completely bizarre, blindfold. You know what I mean? You can sense a Renault Sport car just from the way it makes, the way you feel the car. So, and I'm sure that just comes down from, or top down from people who just love motor racing and enjoy being around racing.
Yeah.
So
they've always been a friendly team, haven't they? They've always been that sort of had a sort of friendly face to them, haven't they? They've always
absolutely.
Sort of in the spirit of kind of motor racing as it kind of should be, I guess.
So I've got a. So 10 quid, guys, I want you to bet who's gonna finish next year's championship with the most points, Sainz or the Hulk?
Hulkenberg.
Oh.
Toby's struggling over the £10 thing. What?
Hang on, that's another £10 I'm going to lose again, isn't it?
Yes.
I've got a history of this. If I say Sainz, does that, that's going basically... No, I'm a big fan of Sainz. I think he's a good racer. And he's cut from the same cloth as his compatriot Fernando. I think he's he may not have that ultimate pace, but I think he's got that kind of fire in his belly, and I kind of like that about him.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think the best is yet to come with Carlos. I think we haven't seen the best of him yet.
I think that's Damon's way of saying science.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do it.
All right, okay.
So the ten quid down the road, right?
I like the way science goes about it.
Yeah.
I don't mind that he has the odd, spin and dink and crash and stuff, because he's always a proper tryer. But yeah. I think he's been criminally sort of underestimated and recognised for too long in his career, and he's as far as I'm concerned, he's in the very top flight.
It's kind of make or break for him now, isn't it? Because he's been around a while now, so this is his chance, really. As a full factory team, he's going to have a brand new car at his disposal. Team's built around him. I think it's time to deliver for the Hulk. So hopefully he will. We all want him to do well. We all want him to win.
I
did answer the question with one word initially, but I just, some of the stuff I've seen from Hulkenberg over the years, junior categories as well as F1. I just think there is definitely something there, and it's Brazil 2012 sticks in my mind.
Is that the pole?
No, that was 2010.
Oh, it was
2010.
Right.
Brazil 2012 was when it started to drizzle, and Jenson Button and Hulk were the only two who stayed out on slicks in the drizzle, and as a result of which they were about 50 seconds. And they both, they all went in for wets, came out, discovered it wasn't such a good idea after all, and meanwhile Hulkenberg and Button were just calmly, and he was very close to Jenson, who's brilliant in those conditions. And that, yeah, we haven't seen enough of that perhaps, but it was a snapshot of what he can do.
Yeah.
And sure that once Renault is firing on all cylinders, we'll see more of that.
Yeah. So let's go from one extreme to another, actually. This is fantastic. Yeah.
If I could actually just add just one thing, selecting reverse very briefly. When we talked about the Lauda thing, we didn't mention, and I think we should,
go on.
Morris Hamilton.
Yep.
To complement my lunch, Morris did a kind of a very experienced writer, Morris, great guy, and he did a lovely kind of overview of Nicky the man, what makes him tick, looking at Nicky the person, some of his racing stuff, some of his business stuff.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, I was chuffed a bit that Morris agreed to write it, and I was even more chuffed when I saw what he'd written, because I think it's a lovely, lovely analysis of Nicky the guy.
Yeah, absolutely. That's on page 73, Morris, story from Morris. And actually, Damon, a big pat on the back for you. I think the layout, design and layout of the...
No, thank you very much.
Well, actually, the whole issue, but I love the inside line Nicky Lauda design layout and the sort of nod to his crash helmet in the on-page graphic, I think, is nicely done.
Thank you very much.
OK, so the one extreme to the other, I mentioned, yes, European truck racing. This is the photo essay in the issue, and we sent our... our staff photographer Lyndon, who can't be with us today. where is he?
He's in Barbados.
And what's he doing in Barbados?
Truck racing.
He's watching more truck racing. He's at the Bahamas Speed Week
or something. Yes.
As I think it's called. But I'm sure we'll hear more about it in the next. In the next podcast, but
and there'll be a fantastic photo essay as well from Speed Week. If he ever comes back,
yes.
That is, so,
but yes, to this issue where he was in somewhere a little bit less not Mediterranean, that's not the right word, Caribbean, that's the one, isn't it? That's the one, the other one.
Yeah, pass the map, David.
What's the other city?
It's a lot less Caribbean because it's landlocked.
Yeah. Hungary.
I can see your confusion, yeah. Damon. It's Hungary, Barbados.
It's almost literally nothing like each other.
Heavy Metal Thunder, this story. I won't go into it too much, but it's the story of the European Truck Racing Championship. And Lyndon went, over to Budapest, not Barbados, and came back with some fantastic images from what is a seemingly a very healthy, very vibrant, and very, how can I say, visually arresting spectacle.
Sort of salt on the senses. We I think Simon and I have been to see them at
my stag do was
your stag do. I remember
Brands Hatch truck racing
as it would be. We've all witnessed the sort of spectacle of these things charging around, and if you get the chance to go to Brands Hatch and watch these things, definitely do it. It's amazing.
Well, there's one coming up, the annual first weekend in November there. Truck racing with fireworks after the truck racing as well as during the truck racing. But I know a lot of people are sniffy about it, but as a way to get kids interested in motor racing, the drivers are very accessible. They love kids clambering into the trucks, which obviously kids love doing.
Yeah.
There's always a load of other stuff going on at truck meetings designed for children, whether it's live music or people in, monster trucks crushing Volvos and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's designed not for what I suspect are probably a typical motorsport reader who love Bugattis and the RAs and so forth. But as a family thing, it's a good fun weekend, and the more we can encourage kids to enjoy
definitely.
And become involved in any form of motorsport.
100%.
As a taster for to sustain our industry into the future, I think it's a good thing, and truck racing does it very, very well. I was supposed to be with Lyndon in Hungary, but I picked up stomach poisoning or something. I didn't really fancy being on an easy jet at 37,000 feet. So
wasn't following breakfast with Nicky Lauda, was it?
It wasn't following breakfast with Nicky Lauda. So
was that Venus schnitzel or strudel or whatever
that
was
for
breakfast?
Sausage coffee,
frothy sausage.
So unfortunately, I had to duck out. But I think he's done a very nice job of capturing the essence of the slightly different characters. You don't need to be in the gymnasium 24/7, it seems, to race a truck.
Ooh, really?
Wait a minute.
Not a second. I've done a lot of training in the gym this year for my MGB racing. What a wally. Anyway.
So, yes, It's exciting stuff and a change of pace. You know, motorsport is supposed to be full of these wonderful stories from around the globe, and this highlights that. So, yeah.
Well, the contrast as well is also brilliantly illustrated, I think, on page 98 and 99, where we looked at the Scarab, so the 50s Grand Prix car. Now, this is the second of a series of three stories that is written by Nigel Rees, who is extremely well-rated technician engineer, and he has managed to transform the performance of a number of cars that weren't particularly successful in period, and this Scarab is absolutely one of them. And this is another one of those stories that we encourage you to take your time over, because it's very, very dense. It's full of lots of information, but it does reveal how certain cars just didn't reveal their true potential in period, and Nigel and his team have managed to deliver performance that would have probably changed the sort of fabric of motorsport results if you'd been able to do it in time, and it's often
as you read the piece, you as it was with the Arrows A4 that he covered previously, it's stuff that in the current era it's fairly simple physics, but the tools to investigate said physics just didn't exist in 1959, 1960 when the Scarab was first around, and it's just quite interesting to look at the numbers and you think, blimey, that was way out, but then you have to think about what they were doing, the technology available to a lot of these people at the time, you know, small team as it was and so on. I think it's a nice warm, uplifting tale.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. And it's certainly a car to seek out if you're ever at Goodwood or in any historic race paddock.
I've seen it race at Goodwood, I've seen it race in the Monaco Historic, I've seen it race at Silverstone. It's a lovely looking thing, and Julian Bronson drives it very, very well.
Absolutely. Okay, there's a lovely sidebar in this feature as well, the rear engine revolution, why did it take so long? That's worth having a really good read as well. It's great, great analysis there from Nigel. And again, we'll jump over to the States now. So this is Newgarden, Joseph Newgarden, and his IndyCar Championship win. Seems a little bit odd that we're talking about a championship winner at this time of year.
They don't know.
What do they do now? when does the season start again? Does it start?
It starts in March, April. I mean, about the same time. Okay. It's only because Formula One has become extended. The first few years I covered Formula One, you kind of finished mid-October.
Yeah.
And you flew back from Japan and then stayed at home for 4 months.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, Formula One has kind of now moved to this flirting with December.
Yeah.
Almost. But it's just, that's, you know, I mean, the Rally GB, RAC Rally, call it what you will, takes place before the end of the Formula One season, whereas it used to be sort of months after the end of the Formula One season. It's just, you know, the way the sport is.
Yeah.
The sport has changed, but America hasn't quite.
He's Newgarden's potentially a big star.
He's
American. Yeah. You know, he's done very well in the championship this year. Very mature delivery of the championship, and I think it was proposed online on the Motorsport Magazine website this week that maybe if Toro Rosso are looking for a driver, that they should look no further than Newgarden.
Absolutely.
It'd be great for the sport, wouldn't it?
Do a Jacques Villeneuve and come across the pond.
Even if it's for a race, while Red Bull are trying to sort themselves out.
Yeah, he's done his championship now, so there's nothing to win.
I think you might have to pay Roger Penske a few quid to prize him out of his contract. certainly now there's a champion, but I think it was Penske took the decision to drop Juan Pablo Montoya, who's a proven package, still very quick, because it was the opportunity within Newgarden's kind of contractual situation to grab him, and if somebody like Roger Penske thinks he's worth grabbing, there's some mileage in that. He looked decent when he raced in the UK a few years ago in Formula Ford.
Mm-hmm. He did well at the festival, didn't he? He did really well.
You can never really tell at that level, but I think in the last couple of years, his performances in IndyCar racing rather have been very revealing.
Yeah. Okay, contrast again, from the States to Goodwood, and this is the story of, this is page 112, and we have the story of the Alaman Mustang. which has been revived. And the great thing about this, Gordon wrote this story, and it's beautifully written, as all of Gordon's stories are. He's a wonderful writer. He alerted this us to this because we've actually featured this before.
True Motorhead style.
Yeah, so 53 years ago, actually.
Oh, right. I'm sure we all remember, yes.
That was our first acquaintance with the Allan Mann Mustang, and the car's been brought back to life again by Allan Mann Motorsport. Dickie gave it a shakedown at Goodwood, but the Gordon story is the story of how they rejuvenated it. And on the page 116, Damon, the shots of it at the Tour de France on those steel wheels.
Yeah, I mean, they were kind of little scratchy postcard size images, so sadly couldn't be used too much larger, but they were sort of about as big as they would go. But we managed to dig them out of the archives, but it sort of illustrated how close the restoration is to the original thing. Down to the period white sort of steel rims, which is brilliant.
Yeah,
every car should have them.
I think we all swooned, didn't we? when we saw these images, when Lyndon's pictures came in, we kind of all just had a bit of a moment, didn't we?
So. It's great that Henry obviously has been involved. Was involved with the restoration as well. I mean, it's certainly a circular story there with Henry kind of coming back and sort of putting it all back together again.
Yeah,
it's lovely to look at and even lovelier to read, I'd say. But I mean, the car looks, as you said, Gordon's done a brilliant job of the words, but it's just one of the most attractive cars I've seen in motorsport for months and months. Yeah. It's absolutely lovely.
Nothing better than a bright red Mustang in Goodwood on a sunny day with blue skies and all the rest of it.
Well, you turn the page and you suddenly see what looks like a transparent car inside the Ultimate Street Racer, page 118. And this is Mercedes-AMG. This is their... It's the F1 car for the road. This is their hypercar that is powered by the Formula One engine, but it's also four wheel drive. So it's taken the technology and augmented it, amplified it. Mm. So now I haven't seen the car in the flesh. From the pictures, I think it's a little bit disappointing, to be honest. However,
the front's a bit sort of corporate, isn't it? It just feels a bit soft.
And haven't various internet artists been doing their own sort of rendering?
Yeah, they've make it,
been redesigning it before it's
putting the pointy noses of an F1 car on it, and it looks way better. but the rear fin's quite a thing. But I don't know. You just get the feeling, you know, with a blank sheet of paper and a kind of a money no object kind of a brief, you'd think that they would have something a little bit more spectacular. But
well, here's some figures. Okay. So the revs are capped from the 13,000, that's the usual limit for F1, to 11,000, which is still pretty much twice anything else.
That's still a motorbike, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I've been lucky. I've driven all sorts of the
hypercars. The Hondra S2000 doesn't come on cantle about 11,000, does it?
That's right, and then for 600 revs.
Yes,
But yeah, I mean, the things like the Enzo and LaFerrari, they're good for 8.5, 9. But, you know, this will rev 2,000 RPM beyond. But it's a 1.6 V6, so straight from the Formula One car. Mm. I think since we wrote this story, there are rumours that the whole car will be built in the UK. But we'll see what happens there, because that's obviously a slightly difficult one for Mercedes to manage that.
Yeah, will this be on your list of cars that I want to drive, possibly, maybe?
Possibly, maybe. Yeah, it is. But, you know, the more time I spend here, the more I sort of lust after, you know, driving... I don't know, the MGB's opened my mind, you know, to how much fun you can have with 160 horsepower, you know. I'm so lucky. I've driven the Veyrons and, you know, Enzos and 918s, P1s and everything, and they blow your mind. But the race that I had a couple of weeks ago, did I tell you about that?
No, tell us again.
A little bit was wet, you know, and just slithering that thing around. But anyway, I mean, we're focusing on this car because it is... this is an F1 car for the road, and that's been proposed a number of times. Yeah. But I think...
I think this is the first time since the Ferrari, which you could argue was a slightly muted version. But this is full on, full bore, isn't it?
There's
compromise.
There's never been a road car that's been
It is, and 90% of them will probably be sold to people who live in Monte Carlo, where you can never get a second gear in a Toyota Aygo. So I'm not quite sure you'll be able to exploit its full potential, but...
You're not buying one, then?
The punto's still going strong, so...
Is it? Yeah. And it can't even get close to the performance, the punto.
Really. Well, as you were saying about low-powered cars, I mean, or, you know, older cars, I mean, I still adhere to the maxim that something with low power, which you actually have to drive and maintain momentum and think about what you're doing, rather than just being able to switch it on and off as you will, I find more fun.
Yep.
It might be a bit weird like that, but...
Well, it's going to be around 2.25 million euros, 275 unit production run. I'm sure it will be astonishing.
Yes.
And I love the fact that these cars are still being built. You know,
The
fact that this kind of thing exists, I think, is to be celebrated. I mean, it is obviously wholly impractical in the real world where the Fiat Punto reigns. But I mean, the fact that people are prepared to do this, it's just. To me, it's whatever you think of the looks. I mean, it is almost, it's engineering as an art form, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Be able to do 30,000 miles between rebuilds for a car that's got 1,000 horsepower, is four-wheel drive, it's 1.6. I mean, it's kind of miraculous, I think, actually.
Because I don't think many 1.6 Focuses pull that kind of power out, do they? Not many.
I don't know, I've seen a few in Southend that look. But yeah, we'll obviously feature this car again, and hopefully we'll have the opportunity to track test it. I'm sure the number of hands will go up in the office to volunteer for that one. But Andrew Frankel's done a great job with the story, and let's see how that one develops. And I think we ran out of time about 10 minutes ago, chaps, I'm afraid. So I'll quickly summarise. We've got in road test, we've got the new Honda Civic Type R, speaking of Revy Hondas, the Elise Sprint, Lotus Elise Sprint, lovely little thing. And a quick Audi. We have 12 cylinder Ferraris in Speed Shop, and we have super touring cars, and one of the next big proposed, whether it's one of the next big things in historic racing. A story on the Hamilton Rothko collection and collaboration that's emerging. Auctions, Porsche 911 GT3, BMW 1800 Ti.
And a Ferrari owned by Keith Richards, of course.
Owned by Keith Richards, absolutely.
how very motorsport, isn't it? What an eclectic mix.
And I think, to be honest, probably one of my favourite pictures in the issue, if not my favourite picture in the issue, is on page 168. I'm not going to tell you what that is, because that's my way of saying, if you haven't got the issue, go and buy the issue and see the picture on 168.
Ah, yes, I've just turned that one. Yes, that is a good one, That is a really
picture,
good one.
Isn't it? Listen, guys, thank you, Damon, and thank you, Simon, for joining me on this issue commentary. This is the November 2017 issue. It's on sale now if you're listening to this in October 2017. Damon's doing a sign that says four, which I presume means the covers.
Yes, buy all four, yes.
No, yeah. You don't have to buy all four. That's not why we did it.
All right, two.
just buy two, yeah. No, we did it because we thought, well, what a great opportunity to show the four sides of Niki Lauda. And, of course, on the newsstand, it's quite fun when you're thumbing through the issues. You see a different one. If you can't find the cover that you'd like, give us a call. The details are on the website. At motorsportmagazine.com, and we'll be able to send you one out from our office. Guys, what's your favourite? We've got four. What's your favourite?
You're not allowed to have, it's like children, you're not supposed to have your favourite, are you? But my favourite actually is the Fighter,
The Fighter?
Yeah. It's just because of all that stuff on the helmet, the dirt and the kind of stone chips and the worn the wear. It just looks like he's been through hell.
I obviously like all of them because I'm like that. But my personal favourite, just because I think it's quite a sweet image, is the rookie. And it's also probably the first time a March 71's been on the cover of Motorsport. But it's a sort of innocent age. And yeah. I mean, it's pre-accident Nicky, the wide open Bellstar helmet. Just quite simple. Mm. And it's before he was well known. It's when he was still back in the period we described, when he was regarded as a renter driver. Yeah. And before the real Nicky Lauda had emerged to the wider world. And I just think it's quite a touching shot.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Simon. Actually, the way that he looks, he looks so small in the car. You know,
the March 71 was dimensionally huge.
Challenged. Yeah, but he just has this kind of, there's an innocence about that shot. He looks small in the car and he's looking up, you know, sort of wide-eyed. Yeah, it's a hell of a thing. So we really hope you enjoy this issue. This it was great fun to put together, and Simon in particular, you know, I know we shouldn't single anyone out, but Simon, you did a great job, you know, with your various adventures here, there and everywhere, of which you've had another one recently down to Monaco. We won't tell you who Simon went to visit, but he's a Formula One driver, as you might expect.
Forthcoming lunch, yep. And there's also further evidence that you really don't need a Mercedes hypercar in Monaco because you really can't get out of second gear, even when it's not run with race traffic. You just can't.
You probably would have done in the Punto, though, wouldn't you? You
know, yes. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everyone. So we will be back. We have more podcasts coming up, both in association with Mercedes-Benz and the Royal Automobile Club. Tell your friends. We hope you enjoy them. And stay tuned for the next issue commentary, which will be the December 2017 issue of Motorsport. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.